And with that sound, let the 8th annual Mobile Nations podcast of Mobile World Congress begin.
Mobile.
How goes it? Mobile. I am Phil Dickinson. You guys know me if you're listening to this, probably. I run Android Central. We have a table full of people here in Barcelona, Spain for Mobile World Congress 2015. This is my 6th one. Wow. Is this your 4th, Alex?
This would be my 4th. Wow, that's impressive.
That I remember that, or that you've been here that many times?
Yeah.
I should get a little credit for knowing how long you've worked for me, I think.
That's impressive in some way.
Alex is 4th. Andrew's 2nd.
Correct.
How many for you, Richard?
2nd.
1st for you,
this is Derek's 1st.
All right.
Let's
just go around the table real quick for those who might be joining us for the first time, and if you are, this is...
Buckle up.
Yeah. This is not how we usually do things, because A, it's not live.
Is strap in.
Yes. Or strap on. What?
It's been a long day, Phil.
Strap on your headphones.
You strap it on.
A GoPro, headphones.
Yeah.
Jeez, people.
The HTC Recamera.
What were you talking about?
It's original packaging.
Sure. Normally, you know, at least at Android Central, we podcast live once a week, and we're all not in the same room. So this is one of those rare occasions, once or twice a year, where we all end up in the same room. Generally, for some of us, not on the continent on which
we had to come all the way to Spain to do it, which is funny because none of us live here.
Exactly. So. Nobody lives here.
That's hilarious.
Well, I mean, Spanish people live here. And we love them. They're great, but we don't live here. So we are here in Barcelona for Mobile World Congress. Can we go around the table and introduce ourselves for those who don't normally, you know, whatever?
No.
All right. That's Derek Kessler.
Hi, I'm Derek Kessler. I'm the managing editor of Mobile Nations, and I write about everything.
WebOS.
And Palm.
And Palm. Richard Devine. I won't even let him introduce himself. You guys know him.
Yeah, maybe. If it's the first time, they won't, so...
That's true. You know me, so I'm going to shut up now and go to the Andrews and Alex's.
You might know Andrew Martinick already also. I'm the West Coast guy.
Yes.
You can tell from the way he talks.
Yeah.
Totally.
Different. And by the way he walks.
Not on a podcast.
That's true. Not on radio.
Yeah.
And hi, I'm Alex Dobie, managing editor of Android Central.
And
here to write about phones and stuff.
Though he refuses to come join us at this, well, we can't call it a round table because it's a very rectangular table, but refuses to join us for this podcast, but absolutely needs to be acknowledged for everything he's done here this week.
Mark, come say hi.
Mark Gwim.
He has headphones on.
He can't even hear us. He's still busy working at 11:30 on a Sunday night. So Mark is normally with Windows Central, formerly Windows Phone Central, and just does an awesome job with a lot of the video that we do here. If the video looks good, Mark did it. If it doesn't look good, it was probably me.
Thank you. And it took us 4 or 5 times as long as well to reach that.
Yes.
Mediocre.
It took me a long time to get this bad, actually. So it is Sunday night. Technically, Mobile World Congress hasn't even started yet, which is kind of the crazy thing.
Day 0.
I've been in town since Wednesday for reasons that will become clear in a minute. Where do you guys want to start? Usually we just kind of go through all the crazy crap we've seen, and I think we've seen most of it already, so I'm pretty confident in doing a podcast this early in the week.
Sure. I mean, we kicked off today, I think the two of us, with LG.
Yes.
The new wearables, to a lesser extent, the new mid-range phones.
And then LG, like it normally does, announces what it's going to show at Mobile World Congress a week or two before, if not outright leaks it.
Just with press releases randomly.
Yeah, so we knew what we were getting.
Yeah, so we're getting mid-range phones. Yeah, LG's got a bunch of new sort of curved mid-range stuff that we're going to get a better look at later in the week. The big news for us, I think, on Android Central and maybe even WebOS Nation, Derek, is... the LG Watch Urbane and Watch Urbane LTE. So one is an Android Wear watch, the other is the first watch to have 4G LTE connectivity. It's also the first watch to run LG's new wearable platform, as they're calling it. It's based on WebOS, but yeah, they're branding it as the LG wearable platform. You won't see them call it a WebOS watch anywhere, officially. And despite the name that they share, they're two very different kinds of devices, right, Phil? So one is Android Wear, the other is WebOS. One is very much designed to work in partnership with your phone. The other can do that, but is really more of a standalone watch.
Yeah, I mean, one is traditional Android Wear. right? Yeah. And it's the G-Watch R, just scaled down with more metal.
Yeah, prettied up and sort of slimmed down.
It looks really nice.
It's a little more shiny. The strap is a little bit nicer, a little bit softer. It's got a stitched leather effect. Well, it is stitched leather. It's not
metal. And I think they can probably go even farther than that and refine that even further and make it look a little better.
Absolutely. I was saying my hands on today, it's been less than a year since we got the first LG wearable, the very generic original G-Watch, and go from that to the G-Watch R and now to the Urbane. I still think... I don't think the Urbane is a perfect design. I think it still feels very lightweight, doesn't have much heft to it. But there's no denying it is a huge improvement from the G-Watch R, which in turn was a huge improvement from the first G-Watch.
As Phil quietly checks the mic, but he's grabbing the mic, so it's probably not quiet.
I can see the squiggles.
Yeah, I can see the squiggles right there, too. I'm trying to get Alex a little... Maybe I'll move it over
here. It's okay, we'll cut all this out.
I think the angle is getting to us there.
No, we're totally leaving that in.
Okay.
The interesting thing, though, is that they're both branded the same... They're just the LG Watch Urbane, and then there's no indication that they're...
So there's an LTE version.
Well, it's more of just a separate watch. You look at these two together, they're really not the same watch.
That's why it's so weird that it's branded as...
But here's the thing. It's weird to you because you know about this stuff. If you're just some person in Korea who really wants a connected watch and wants it from LG, do you care that it's not really the same? I mean, it's... Urbane is the watch. That's what they're... That is the brand they're selling over there. They're not selling Android Wear Urbane. They're not selling... Mm. LG OS, wearables OS Urbane.
They're selling it as an LG smartwatch.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You look at the designs are very different. You look at the regular Urbane, it's shiny, it's got a leather strap. You look at the Urbane LTE, it's more of like a brushed finish.
Yep.
You've got more of almost like a sports watch style rubber strap with a metal clasp. Very different look to it. They're still metal smartwatches that look and to a certain extent feel premium, especially the LTE version. But you wouldn't necessarily look at them and identify them as the same family of watch, you know.
We had a lot of questions in the Q&A about the LTE watch running WebOS, and this actually goes back to the little scoop Alex had at CES. Actually, it was like the big scoop of CES, and that, hey, there's this WebOS watch. It's not Android Wear after all. And what was really weird is it was a strange prototype that, like, hadn't really trickled out to the PR and marketing people yet, so... Mm.
And it was with Audi.
Yeah, I mean, and it was really just a prototype.
Yeah.
So when there were conflicting answers about what this thing was back then, that's the reason why. And even running up to this week, I saw The Verge had a direct quote from LG saying that no, this thing does not run WebOS. We knew damn well at the time it did. We didn't have anything for publication, but we all know Dieter and we know those guys, and I was talking to him. I'm like, look, dude, they're not making a second non-Android Wear OS run on a watch.
I think from LG's perspective, this isn't a WebOS watch. You know, they think of WebOS, it's the thing they license for their, well, not license, they own it, for their TVs.
Yeah, this is just using the core of WebOS.
Yeah,
none of the interface is going to be familiar to anybody with a WebOS TV or somebody that used WebOS in the past.
Somebody had a really good question in the Q&A, and that is, well, how come your TV people are marketing it as this smart TV with WebOS, and the watch is just there? And the answer was, well, we don't really talk to them. So I think people are really reading too much into this thing running WebOS. It's not like anyone... And remember,
you're not going to be able to get on the WebOS app catalog and start...
Yeah, and this watch is, you know, it's going to be sold in Korea, which, you know, it doesn't mean anything other than that it's a limited market. It's not like it's being sold worldwide and just everybody's going to want this WebOS watch. You know, look, if you have an even idea what a WebOS watch is, then chances are you're, you know, among the faithful and one of us anyway.
We were joking that there were two people on the entire planet that even cared about WebOS.
And Derek,
Derek's like one and a half of those people.
But it's kind of like, you can look at things like the Pebble as well. You know, there's it's not a...
What's it running?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you want a Pebble, you buy a Pebble. Presumably the LTE version functionally is kind of on a par with the Android Wear version. Obviously the cellular connectivity.
If it didn't have a recognizable name, you wouldn't care what operating system.
No, the recognizable name is LG.
Right,
it's front and form.
Only people like us that are really going to care. So
it is worth noting that this watch with LTE and Wi-Fi and all the sensors and accelerometers in it. It's essentially a watch, a phone your wrist. So it could just be that LG is, they're going the Samsung route, and this is their Tizen.
And it will tie into your phone.
Yeah, it'll tie into it. Well, if it'll work in a couple of ways. It doesn't tie into an Android phone, I think, running 4.4 or above. 4.3 or above. Or it can also be set up as a standalone, essentially a standalone mobile device. So you have a dialer on there, you know, Messenger, a tiny keyboard that is kind of horrible to use, but you know, it's there.
It's a tiny keyboard.
You know, a bunch of other stuff, like you have fitness tracking stuff. A bunch of apps to use the sensors, like a virtual golf caddy type thing is on there as well. Apps for cycling.
Yeah.
You know, a huge number of apps that you have on there, and, you know, its own app draw, its own launcher in a certain way, where you press one of the three buttons on the side, you have this carousel that pops up. You can scroll around. Really totally different to the experience that you get on Android Wear, which is led by the phone, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. So that's LG. We're not going to see this watch until later. No, it was the other watch, right?
I think in the next couple of months. Yeah. I think you know, the primary one, they're still saying Android Wear is their primary wearable OS. They went to great lengths to say that the LG wearable platform, the WebOS watch, if you want to call it that, is a secondary thing that they're experimenting with in Korea, because that's, you know, the carrier demand. You know, connected wearables that are connected, you know, independently of phones. They want to sell those devices. So the regular Urbane is, I think, is the one you'll see first. You know, maybe it'll see a broader release internationally later on, but I think it's going to be a bit of a niche product either way.
Richard, you guys saw some interesting watch stuff today from Huawei.
Of all... Well, I keep saying I'm going to stop saying I'm surprised that they've designed such nice-looking products. But the Huawei watch is probably the best-looking Android Wear watch that there is at the minute.
How was the band? It was the one thing that looked a little weird to me.
So they're experimenting with different bands right now, and they were at pains to tell you that they're still months away from even having a finalized design, let alone being, you know, selling it to the public. So they...
Wait a minute, they're months away from having a finalized design, and yet they're having billboards up in the airport?
They just said, it's MWC, this is where you come to... tell people about these sort of things. And because I asked them, I said, well, which bands are going to go with which colors and what are you going to do? And they were like, these are just bands that we're looking at. They had probably 15 different bands laid out there.
Metal, leather, they've got the...
And a rubberized sport one. And they were all matched up with different colors. You know, you have black bands with gold faces and all gold models, all silver models. And
slim bands for, you know, like female buyers who traditionally would buy a watch with a slimmer band.
So they were really, and even with that being said, it looked really nice. No flat tire on the whatever on the round display. They're actually using plastic OLED, like LG is using for their round watches.
They're probably using LG's.
They're probably using LG's plastic.
That's on the top one.
No, that's on the other one too.
It's an AMOLED on the watch.
Oh, I'm getting confused with the TalkBand, which is also metal and fancy and leather.
What is the TalkBand?
So, well, let's finish the watch really quick before I get more confused.
Sure.
So
it's all confused.
But other than that, it's an Android Wear watch. So the story is not the software. It's just the hardware is really intriguing. It looks really nice. It's not outlandish. They didn't try to do anything funky. They just made a nice looking watch that comes in three colors.
They didn't talk much about the software. I mean, there's going to be some custom Huawei.
They've got a custom health app,
activity tracking app that, you know, we haven't seen yet because presumably
custom watch faces.
But they didn't spend much time talking about the, you know, the software, because it's Android Wear. At the end of the day, it's the same as you're going to get from LG, you know, from Motorola, from Samsung, from anybody else making an Android Wear watch. But they were really sort of into telling us the design story, and they brought on a team of actual watchmakers, you know, like people who design traditional timepieces, to help them design this watch, because they wanted it to look like
a what?
They wanted it to look like a quality timepiece. You've got the sapphire crystal lens on there, which is
a big deal.
So, I mean, we don't know how much it's going to cost. We're probably not going to see it till June, July time.
So, what gives us an idea of the cost is that they rolled out the TalkBand, which is a second version of the previous one they made. It's just a fitness thing, a little fitness wearable that pops out and turns into a Bluetooth headset. Because that's the thing some people want, apparently. So they came out with a new one that takes a lot of the design ideas of the watch, where there's a sport one that's plastic and rubber, and then there's a metal one that you can have leather bands. So it's kind of a classy fitness tracker. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of saying that, you know, you can, the original TalkBand was clearly like a sports, you know, like a Fitbit style. You were going to wear it at the gym, whereas this you could
wear it all.
You could wear it to work if you have to wear a suit, and you know it'll kind of blend in, and it's the same principle, but they've tweak the hardware. And
so the fancy one of the new TalkBand is 199 euros. So that gives you an indication that the watch is going to be, you know, it's not going to be bargain basement pricing. If they're doing the fitness band with fewer features, no sapphire crystal, things like that, for 199. So
yeah, you're looking 300, 350 at least.
I would expect with a metal band, probably over 300, yeah. And then they did a giant phone, of course.
Saturday morning, I'm pausing to try to remember my days. Saturday morning, Alex and I sat down with Alcatel for a little while, or Alcatel One Touch, if you're nasty. and they have the new Idol 3.
They do, and it's actually two phones, surprisingly nice phones.
They tend to do that. They're like, here's the name, and they're actually it's like five series. Phones to go with it. Yeah, it's a series. I mean, Alcatel, if you don't know them, you're talking off contract, you're talking very affordable. Traditionally,
like $100 to $250.
And that's what we're talking here. Traditionally, you'd lose out on like LTE for something like that for any number of reasons. But not so in this case. There are actually a couple of very, at least at first glance, you know, us playing with them for an hour or so, very capable low-end phones. So there's a 4.7-inch phone that very much looks and feels like a plastic Nexus 4, except for the user interface, of course. And then there's a 5.5-inch one that is obviously much bigger. Both have front-facing speakers. Both are running Android 5.0.2. Which, you know, there are other new phones out there that we can't say that about, new-ish phones out there that we can't say that about.
And to be fair, like, from seeing past Alcatel phones as well, they weren't necessarily always kind of launching things with the latest software.
No, so, I mean, you compare the two that we saw earlier this week to, you know, the sort of half dozen or so devices we saw last year in Berlin, Richard.
The difference
in build quality and software. You know, the software is still customized. You know, they're getting a little bit closer to stock, but it's still not quite there.
It's funny how much they said stock, but these things aren't stock.
It isn't stock. There are parts of it that are stock or that resemble stock, but it's not. You know, you're not talking Nexus, Google Play Edition, or whatever here.
Yeah, they're nice. They're not bad. I mean, the big one's going to go for under 250, which probably means like 249.
So the big one, you're looking at a 1080p screen, 5.5 inches, Snapdragon 615, I believe, which is the mid-level 64-bit chip that HTC had, I think, in the Desire 20.
Front-facing speakers.
So we're not exactly talking low-end hardware.
No, you're right.
It's a nice phone.
Yeah. I would call this mid-range more than low-level.
Low-end. But again, off-contract, you know, sub 250, we talk about buying, and I keep thinking of my kids when we're talking about these devices. I gave my 8-year-old daughter I didn't give it to her, but we keep a 2013 Moto X in the house now. But look at the Moto G, look at the Moto E. Why are we not having that same conversation about Alcatel at this point?
And it's not, Motorola isn't the only company that can meet that price point.
Right.
There's nothing special about what they're doing there. They're just being very smart about the components that they're
putting in. I mean, maybe it's just xenophobia, and because it's a traditionally Chinese company that we're just not used to, and it's not Motorola.
I mean, look, breaking into the US market isn't easy, especially for a traditionally.
That's part of the reason why.
Yeah.
And for what it's worth, Motorola is a Chinese company.
It is now,
And guess where most of the phones are even, where are they all put together?
I don't know why we have this stigma about that, and I think it's maybe time we get over it. I'm going to say it now. I want us to take a serious look at these phones. If these are capable phones that you can get off contract for under $300, that's a big deal.
Sure. And I kind of said the same thing after Berlin. You know, they what I saw, you know, six, seven months ago, they were making good hardware. Selling it in the US is always going to be a tough ask, but it doesn't mean that they're making bad phones.
Yep. So we're going to take...
You know, particularly a lot of impressive things with the display and the camera.
Yep.
Yeah,
the display was a lot, I say more shallow. Like, you know, it was a good-looking display, like it's almost floating right there on the glass, and it's not some display under glass, which is the effect you try to go for. Anything else before we get to the two big giant things? Anybody? Now's your chance.
Looking at the calendar.
It's been a long 36 hours. It's been a really long 36 hours. All right, well, I'll start. Hang on, my wife is texting me. Weird.
Doesn't she know you're podcasting right now?
No, she doesn't.
We'll cut that.
It's not live, Derek. She has
absolutely no idea. So I got in on Wednesday and spent a couple of days looking at the HTC One M9. I had the phone for about 36 hours in my possession and got to do whatever I wanted to with it. I mean, at this point...
That was creepy.
That was very creepy and then slightly less creepy.
Thank you.
But instead, you took pictures of it.
In video.
Yeah.
And I took pictures with it. Yeah, it's not a huge departure from the M8, and it's weird. We had a lot of discussion I know I talked about this briefly, but it's a group of journalists that get together a couple times a year with HTC.
Frequencies is what you told me.
Frequencies is what it's called. And it started as like a really, and you know, a lot of what we talk about is off the record, but it started as more of a feedback thing than a get an early look at products thing. And it's kind of taken a shift, and one's not necessarily any better than the other. But where we could talk to them a little more directly and meet with more engineers and people responsible for making the products, hopefully ahead of time a little bit to give them, you know, additional feedback, maybe on things they could change, maybe on things they can't, because it's already set in stone happening.
It's different having that kind of meeting when a product is just coming out. It's basically finished and it's shipping and maybe...
And that was actually something else we talked about this week too. But it's a chance to talk to them a little bit differently, and so we don't have to feel like we're trying to talk to them through our reviews, which is, I don't think, is ever a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, you're not talking to people through a review, are you? You're talking to your audience, obviously, you're not
right,
talking
to
the company.
Right, and that's who you need to be talking to.
You're critiquing the product, not necessarily the company.
Right, but this gives us a chance to be, you know, more candid about it, and so... Yeah, I spent 36 hours with the M9, and by now you've seen the hands-ons, and we did what I thought was a pretty extensive one for a hands-on, and we were trying something a little different.
Mm. No, when we had
time,
that opportunity, then that's absolutely what we're going to try and do.
I feel fairly confident saying I would give that like 50% review, you know, caliber thing that we published. And part of that is because it's not a huge departure from the M8. It's just not. It's like they took the M8 and they really took to heart a lot of the things we said about it. It's slippery. It's a little too big. The camera needs some work.
The slipperiness factor.
Yes.
So I picked it up the first time today, and what immediately strikes you is just how it looks the same, but the feel is just so different in the hand.
It's a little bit smaller. It's not as tall. It's not as wide, and especially losing that little bit of width, and I don't remember what the numbers are exactly offhand. We did a specs post showing. But yeah, losing that little bit of width makes a big difference. But there's also now a little shelf on either side. The phone is actually, you know, it's not plastic on the front. The grills over the speakers are still polycarbonate. But they are blended into the display so much better. So you don't have these weird seams between the metal and the front display and just where the antennas all meet. So, I mean, that makes a big difference in how it looks and feels. But then you have this shelf, this gold trim on the side before it folds over into the back. And that's actually a couple things there. That's two layers of anodization. So they anodize the whole thing once, mask off, you know, the other side, and then anodize it again to get that gold color.
This is on the silver phone, the silver with gold trim.
This is on
black,
all of them.
Oh, the black phones have gold trim as well?
No, the black is black on gray.
Okay.
So it's black trim on a gray phone, on a gray gunmetal like this. It's a lot like this, just with the different design. But it's still anodized twice. There's a gold on gold, and at the last minute, like they didn't even tell us this during the week, they announced a pink one.
Yeah,
and obviously, you know, when you're anodizing, you can do whatever color.
Yeah, it's
you want.
Notable that you've had so many calls of the M7 and the M8.
Yeah, so it would not surprise me in the least to see other colors later.
But I think when you talk about the shelf, the thing that surprised me when I picked it up today was that if you look at the way that the bottom of the shelf joins with the back of the phone, that's almost a little bit like sharp, but not in a bad way. Sharp in the same way that it was sharp on the M7, so that you can actually grip onto it. And that's not the only way that they made it more grippy, is it? They have a new coating on the back, the back of the actual device, you know, the back panel, that is designed to make it grippier and less slippery.
They went to great pains to say that the finish is completed by, like, hand-trained artisans with a clean chamois or something, whatever it was.
It's in the press release.
Each one is buffed with a baby diaper or something. And we kind of had, you know, raised our eyebrows at that and had questions.
So that's cool, but do people care enough about that to want that over a quote-unquote mass-produced
I don't know that
metal
that,
phone.
I don't know that that's a
feature. Because it's just part of the story.
Yeah.
They're going to train all the carrier reps to talk about
right.
this.
Right. They're going
to
say, this probably. Is a replica of the chamois that they use.
This is, the chamois is included.
You're yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, no, I don't think that's like a bullet point feature, but it's something that goes into the full story of these phones.
It's going to be something, I mean, say you own an M8 and, you know, you're not thrilled with the way that it's kind of slippery and stuff.
Right.
The way they've changed it in the M9 is kind of a big fundamental change, and it does feel very different in the hand, but it's something that's difficult to get across either in words or in pictures or in ads or anything like
yep.
that.
Yeah, you really have to feel it. Yeah. No, look, this finished stuff, it's a nice line, and while it is part of the story, it's not a, ooh, wow, part of the story. It's just like, okay. Like,
oh, they fixed that thing that
right.
was kind of annoying
and,
about
and here's how they did it. So, yeah. Let's not, like, totally lose it over that. The camera, the jury's out. That's, and I really kind of want to leave it at that. We went to a Sagrada Familia on Thursday night, and it was dark, and we took pictures inside. And it's an interesting place. I've never been in there before. So, you know, there's stained glass, and there's a lot of interesting lighting, you know, artificial lighting coming down. So you get these interesting mixes of dark and light. And, you know, a real photographer with real camera equipment would have a field day in there. You know, with camera phones, you're a little more limited, and especially in the way I shoot full auto all the time. I'm not going into manual modes on cameras. It just takes too long. I'm not doing it. So I'm in there just taking pictures, and, you know, not impressed. I had a couple. I think one or two might have actually, you know, kind of snuck out on Instagram early. That looked just fine. That looked great. Outside in the daylight, really good. And it's nice being able to. This is a 20, by the way, it's a 20 megapixel Sony sensor on this thing.
Did you say specifically it's a Sony sensor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Sony sensor, although somebody said maybe Toshiba. But
I think the rumor was Toshiba, I think.
Yeah, Sony, I think, is what we know. Doesn't matter to me, whatever. F22. What else? I forget the full sensor size. It was 27.8 or something like that.
The lens size,
sorry.
Yeah.
It was great being able to zoom in on a picture now, like an Instagram, so I can crop into things and it doesn't look horrible.
But it's almost like the compromise has just changed. Like, it's not necessarily less of a compromise, it's just different kind of compromise.
Yeah, it's
gone from being really good in indoor and low light situations to being really good in daylights, you know, your traditional camera phone territory. But then they've almost abandoned a little bit what they had as a differentiator with the M8 and the M7, where it's this really, really good low-light camera.
We have to caveat all this with, it's not final software. They specifically said, look, we have identified some things we're still tweaking in the camera, and it's stuff that can be tweaked in software. So I kind of hesitated to even show many sample pictures, I think, in our preview.
I think we did in the end.
Did you do a couple in the video, maybe?
We showed a few sample shots in the video. We didn't include any in the preview.
Yeah.
So
you had it for 36 hours.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I really hesitate to give this definitive thumbs up or thumbs down on that after 36 hours. You start to get a feel for it.
Mm. But at the same time, we should say whether the impressions were positive or negative.
Yeah.
Positive in good lights, generally a little bit negative.
Unimpressive in poor light. Yeah, and I want to get this thing, you know, down on the floor with my kids when I'm chasing them around and see how it reacts then. And when I'm running around, you know, looking after the dog, and just I need more than 36 hours. If I'm going to poop all over this camera, I want more time.
It doesn't take that long to poop on a camera.
You'd be surprised how long it takes to poop on a camera. What else? The software, Sense 7, it's really more like Sense 6.5. If you've used the M8 or an updated M7, you're going to be right at home here. The big change is they have the Sense Home widget. So you have Blink feed on the left. That's relatively normal. It will now feed in stuff from Yelp and suggest restaurants, which is great, whatever.
Cool.
That's Andrew's excited face for the
That's,
time.
Yeah.
only this was like, a video podcast right about now.
I know.
Yeah. Resting sarcasm, though.
And the home screen has this widget. So you got the clock, the Google search bar, and then this widget. And the widget has three settings: home, work, and out, like you're out for the night. And like many other third-party launchers, it tries to predict what apps you're going to want, or it adapts to the apps that it sees you using in specific places at specific times.
So it's like Aviate and
Cover.
Everything Me as well.
There are a few like this. I did not use it long enough to really for it to get a feel for what I want and how I use it.
And you were just out all the time.
So. Yeah, and we were out all the time. Actually, no, it put work down to some place. So it can predict I think, where you live and work. But you can also feed that in manually. You can choose not to use it at all. It's a widget. Just get rid of it if you don't want it. Or use third-party launcher. That's
probably smart.
Which is probably
the fact that it's not baked into the launcher screen is a good idea.
Totally optional. Anything you download from Google Play, instead of just getting dumped onto the home screen automatically because there's still that stupid Google Play setting that automatically adds things to your home screen, instead of that, it puts them all in a downloads folder in that Sense Home widget. That's kind of cool. I kind of like that idea. That said, apps still rearrange themselves. And I like to think I know which apps I use wherever I am the time. So
you like to have the predictability.
I like to be able to open up the phone and know this app is going to be on
right.
this side of the
we
screen.
Don't count. And I said this is why I think it's a great idea. If you stop seven people on the street and look at their home screen and you ask them, well, why do you have that there? They'll say, I don't know, it was just there.
They may not know why it's there, but they know where it is.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've gotten a call from my grandmother asking me where such and such app went.
Yep.
It's like, I don't know where your app went.
Yeah, where'd you put it? Well, I didn't do anything. Well,
it's probably moved. It's probably
that's
on a different
why
page.
We have these manufacturer UIs. They're trying to make it easier.
And they told us
I get that.
Yeah, stats in the past, how many people just don't customize the home screen at all. And that's surely where this logic comes
from. Yeah, it's insane. So you can also get rid of that folder if you don't like it. Finally, there is a suggested apps folder.
Dun, dun, dun.
And we've heard a lot of gripes about this. I think it was Apex recently. Yeah. Had an I'm feeling lucky thing that would suggest an app, and I don't know if theirs were sponsored. I didn't feel it that follow it that closely.
At some point, they took a vig on some end of it, but
yeah. And that's very much what this is. It is suggested apps for you to download. And what's interesting is it suggested Instagram at one point, but it said on device. Well, if it's on my device, why are you suggesting it to me?
I suggest you start using Instagram, Phil.
Yeah, thanks.
They know enough to know that it's installed. They probably shouldn't share.
It was a little half baked. There were only so many, because of the way it was designed, there were only so many characters available for the name, for the app name, so they would cut off. And summaries were limited to like 10, 12 words, whatever it was, and then it would cut off. It was just, it looked like somebody at HTC decided this was going to be done, and the designers fought it and fought it and fought it, and then finally said, screw it, we're just not going to touch it at all, and that's why it's just half-assed.
It's weird, because it's precisely designed as most parts of Sense are. You do come across areas that just have that weird element to them. Like, if you go into the quick settings on the M8, there's one of the set options is airplane mode.
Yeah.
Instead of airplane mode, it's like abbreviated to three dots.
Exactly.
Little things there, here and there. There's a little bit in the camera app as well that just comes across as maybe awkward or odd, I don't know.
My initial reaction to this was not good. It was, HTC, you're better than this. Any company, you're better than this, really. Especially because it had Clean Master in it. Uh-huh. It had some other Cheetah Mobile apps in it. And I don't know who is suggesting these apps. I don't think they're being like handpicked by anybody. I think
if it was
just
like,
service.
These are the apps that people at HTC who are using the
that might
M8
be
and
useful.
M9, these are our favorite apps for this phone.
Those top 10 apps.
Right, that would be cool. But if it's just randomly taking the Google Play top
there's no curation involved or anything like that. It's just...
I don't know who
it
exactly
could be just,
doing.
That since you only had it for 36 hours, the phone didn't get a good feel for how you use the phone.
Maybe.
And so it's just suggesting, here are what the top apps are.
But
the more that you use it, it could...
No, I think it's more commercial, and because it was definitely regionalized. I was seeing Spanish suggestions, like Spanish app suggestions.
Well, you were in Spain.
Well, yeah, but that's why.
I mean, it sounds like something that would be really cool for first... fancy smartphone you buy and you're really trying to get acquainted with apps.
Mm.
But then that person will never need that again after a week.
It's
why is this something that's on there for everybody?
It's not the end of the world. I don't like it. I don't think it's good. I think it was poorly implemented. The good news is you can get rid of it.
Time could have been better spent elsewhere is what you're...
Yeah, it's... And look, it would not surprise me if at some point it just disappeared and they said, look, that was about it. They don't even say it. It just disappears and dies in untimely death. But yeah, it was not a happy feeling at that. I don't think it's a reason to not buy this phone. I think it's a reason to very quickly take that off your home screen.
And that's funky.
And I think HTC absolutely should never do
that. We're giving HTC crap about this. How much junk do you get on any other manufacturer?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Sure.
So we'll have to see how the bloatware ends up just in the carrier versions anyway.
Sure.
All right, so camera themes.
Yes.
Theming is a really big deal here, and we've seen a bunch of other phones do it. The phone we'll talk about next also does it. CyanogenMod's been doing themes for a while.
MIUI is crazy.
Yeah, Sony has its own theme.
Huawei's got their own theme store.
So HTC has theming now, and I tell you, and I don't want to theme my phones. There's a lot of crap out there. I'm boring. I'm old. But it's really nicely done. It's really easy to implement. You do have to sign in to an HTC account to do it.
Makes sense.
And there's other things you want to sign into an HTC account for anyway, like backup.
I think you can, yeah, you can sign into an HTC account using your Google.
Using your Google, yeah, or Facebook, or maybe Twitter.
I think all three, maybe.
Yeah, so it's easy to do, but it's really well done. They have some really cool options, and it, you know, you're talking to probably one of the best software design companies, at least for mobile, in the world. So there's some really good ones, but what's really cool is it's a whole community. So people, you're going to be able to customize your phone different ways. You can tweak themes and then re-upload them back to this community and share them with people. And then they can do it very much in the same spirit of Zoe, where you know, you have these video highlight reels, and then Alex could download mine and remix it his way with photos he had from Mobile World Congress, and then re-upload it for us all to play with. So
Zoe is still preloaded.
Zoe is still there, still works really well. The camera app is revamped a little bit and better. The gallery app is totally new.
So we've talked about a bunch of new artistic features, haven't you, to combine photos in different ways.
A bunch of new effects. Some, you know, some are cooler than others. Some geometric things. You know,
but you imagine fun. That combined with a new theming thing, where you can maybe combine two photos and it looks really cool, then pull colors out of it to get icons.
You can assign. You can take a picture and assign it as a theme setter, basically, and it will lift colors out of that.
And it's not unlike what Google does with material, you know, the material design stuff in Lollipop, where there are functions built into that that will pull key colors out of images in order to theme UI elements around that. You see that with album art and Google Play Music,
right? So there's that. I'm trying to think what else. CloudX is still built in. It's renamed to the, I think it's called One Gallery. CloudX, you probably haven't heard of it. It was just kind of random download that showed up in the past few months that lets you tie. It's kind of a, it feels clunky, but it works really well. Only clunky because you have to manually install it right now in the M8 and then manually sign in and all this stuff. But it just ties your Facebook pictures. I forget what else. Facebook, Flickr.
Yeah, Picasso. Well, that's
and
Google.
Maybe, so. Yeah, there was one other service, but I forget what. Ties them all into your HTC Gallery app. So I don't have to go into Facebook to see my Facebook pictures. Although,
so, I mean, that's something that Samsung have been doing for a while. And it's something we've actually complained about on Samsung.
It makes the gallery
because
so slow.
It makes the gallery so...
It's not that it's slow. So it's just that... And I've been using it on the M8 for a while. It's just that when I see all pictures and it's showing like 3,000... My brain tends to
It depends on, you'll have to see when we get devices that are final. If it does that and it arranges it in a way that makes sense and isn't overwhelming, then great. But if it does just what Samsung does, which is just, okay, here's a big bucket of photos.
No, it doesn't do that. Right. No, it very clearly says Facebook. Unless you're in all photos, but that's all photos, so that makes sense. So that's about it. Oh, by the way, you can rearrange and add different home screen buttons. Forward, back, home are still there, obviously. You have options for turning the screen off, for turning off auto rotation. You can hit a button and it'll pull down the notification shade. You can hit a button and it'll go straight to the quick settings. Kind of cool. LG's been doing stuff like that for a while.
Yeah, I think you can also change the designs of the buttons, can't you? It's similar to a Sony phone.
Yes, and that's in the theming. That's part of the theming as well, so you'll end up with different buttons. It's cute. It's cool. I mean, overall... Just, again, brief use, 36 hours, but relatively intimate use. Stop looking at me like that, Derek. Yes, I slept with it.
He did anything he wanted.
Yes, I think it's almost absolutely better than the M8. Jury's out on the camera. I still want to use that some more. Battery life, I have no idea.
What?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Bill, you had 36 hours with it. I mean,
I know, 36 hours.
Full battery life.
Roaming on a UST mobile sim, what could possibly go wrong? Snapdragon 810, quick charging. I have no idea how any of that stuff is going to handle. But my initial impression is M8.5, maybe. You know what I mean?
And there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing. Where did people get in their heads?
See that? The people got in their
Apple
heads.
Apple does that every other year.
Yeah.
Yeah. They saw the earlier leak that had that...
Looked like a mini Nexus 9.
Yeah, had the full glass front, and they thought, that looks really nice.
I don't know where that came from. I mean, maybe that's something...
Some random guy.
And this is why leaks aren't
yeah.
all
yeah.
that. because that's all they are. That could have been anything.
And even I mean, think back to the early leaks where you saw the three buttons on the side, and I know there was one of those that I kind of poo-pooed thinking it was a fake ID. And I was kind of hoping for the slimmer speaker suit. By the way, and we asked about that. We're like, look, why didn't you go to the slimmer speaker grills? And they said, we could, but you still have to have the baffles behind them. Mm-hmm. And it's not like in the Desire Eye, where Sony does this as well. It's not like they don't have the baffles back there. You just don't see them.
Yeah.
So you still have
to
have that
space. It's
not like
the bezels would disappear.
Right. The bezels would not go away.
You still
need
the speaker back there.
That black band is still there because there are display components behind it.
And there's battery behind that.
And there's battery behind it. And you can't just get rid of it.
It's not just there for the HTC logo, guys.
I mean, that's...
Still.
I tell you, that's one of the things... One of the best things I've gotten out of this whole frequencies experience over the past 2 years has been getting a better knowledge of how all smartphones are made and what goes into them. And I'm more amazed now than I've ever been that any of this crap works. And let alone we're able to buy it for, you know, $300-$400. You get that sense with all this stuff, and that's why the band is still there. And yeah, I just don't get why people who don't really understand the things that go into this, and remember, I only understand a very small percentage. I'm relatively good at this.
No, get on a higher horse. Come on, Phil.
You know, it's... I can't top that, really. No, thanks.
I mean,
it's hard to be king.
My takeaway is that I'm excited about having an M8 that's actually easy to hold, it's a little bit smaller.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. That, you know, I don't feel like I'm going to drop all the time. I'm worried about the camera. You know, coming from a Note 4 that has a really good camera, I'm not looking at what we have now and thinking that, yeah, maybe it'll be okay, maybe it'll be decent. I'm not thinking this will be a great camera. It'll be good, it'll be decent, it won't cross that sort of threshold to where Samsung and Apple are.
There's the sense that okay just isn't good enough anymore, and maybe it shouldn't be.
Well, HTC isn't okay in any other area. Last area in which they're really... And
that's
struggled for a few years.
And that's what's so frustrating. It's frustrating to all of us who were there as well, I think, because so much else is good. Why is the camera so hard to do? You know, LG, which has traditionally struggled in industrial design, has gotten much better in the past year or two, still struggles in software. Does cameras really well?
Well, and HTC's camera software is really good.
Yeah.
Well, software. The different kinds of software. The software.
It's the user interface software.
The stuff they license to make the sensor.
Call that firmware.
Pictures.
Right. You call that firmware. It's image processing.
We haven't mentioned UltraPixel, by the way. It is still on the phone. It's on the front. You know, so you get more light coming into that front-facing camera for all your late-night selfies. It'll be interesting to see how that holds up to what Samsung's doing in the S6, and I guess...
Yeah, and they're doing... I mean, we'll talk about the S6 a little bit more. They're doing a 5-megapixel sensor with the f1.9 lens.
Okay, well, back up there, Tonto, because let's let Alex... You're Alex. Let's let Andrew...
Well, should we talk about the other stuff HTC's doing?
Oh, God.
Let's wrap HTC.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
They did other things. 6 hours later,
yeah. We're
still talking about HTC.
Welcome to my week. Okay, so relatively quickly, they are finally doing a wearable. It is a fitness band. It's called the Grip.
Well, technically, they're doing two wearables.
Sort of.
Face
wearable. A faceable. The HTC Grip, it's in partnership with Under Armour. Under Armour and HTC announced in January at CES that they were going to start doing stuff together, and flat out said, there will be products, there will be devices.
We've known for a while HTC's working on wearables, so they've made no secret of that.
Yeah. So it's it looks and feels like a relatively traditional fitness tracker. It's this rubberized strap. It's, I think it was 1.8 inches thick, which sounds a little thin. My numbers might be off. I hesitate to even say that now. It's not thin. It's not like Fitbit.
It's like sub-Microsoft band, not quite a Fitbit.
But it's not overly thick. It's really nicely designed. It's got this cool diamond pattern underneath. It's textured.
Green and black.
Green and black is the main color. There's also going to be a deep teal. And I think I might have slipped some pictures of a black prototype in there that I was playing with. But deep teal and black on green or green on black.
And it's the HTC Grip, I think you should...
Yes, it is the HTC Grip. You might see Re in some marketing somewhere. It's a mess.
The Re Grip?
don't get me started. I'm kind of
torn on the whole Grip name anyway, because you don't grip it.
Yeah.
Right around your wrist.
It grips
so.
It
grips you. And you take life by the... I don't know. I won't even tell you what a discarded name for it was, but it was... Even worse.
If it was worse than Regrip, then it must have been bad.
I'll tell you later.
Probably shelved it.
Yeah, so it's got a 1.8-inch, they call it P AMOLED. which stands for positive...
Not plastic.
Active matrix, organic, light-emitting diode. Yes, I still remember what that is. Thank you.
It looks similar to what was on the Huawei talk band, actually.
It's a, I mean, it looks like what you'd expect on a rectangular,
wireless display.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. So it ties into the UA Record app, if you haven't seen that, that tracks your fitness and all this stuff, and then lets you share it, lets you not compete, but you can see how professionals are doing. By the way, this
is all... Well, you can also compete. I think they said that had a...
Yeah, I think it does.
Well, up to 20 people you can compete in.
By the way, this is all separate from a new... It's called FunFit. It's a fitness app from HTC. It doesn't actually talk to it, which is weird.
Is it fun?
Because this is more...
It actually looked really nice. Yeah, I mean, I played with it for 5 minutes, but it looked really nice. Yeah, so it's a fitness tracker. It's going to be $199 out in the spring in North America. I don't know anything about everywhere else. You know, it's a lot of money for a fitness tracker, I guess. I don't know, or is that right in there?
No, that's a lot of money.
Seems like a money to me.
It's on the high end, for sure.
It's a lot of money for a fitness tracker the same way that it's a lot of money for the recamera. It's a lot of money for a little pull.
Which Alex is spending a little more time with, begrudgingly.
Well, I'm spending a little more time with it in its original packaging. We may probably give this one away.
Yes, I think we will. So there's that. And then the really big surprise announcement was from Valve and HTC.
Well, yeah, and this was...
They're doing virtual reality together, and that's sort of all we know. We've seen the visor. You see the cables coming out of it, so it's pretty safe to say that it's some sort of PC-based thing. It has nothing to do with mobile, that I can say, and I haven't used
it. The phone doesn't spot in the front of it.
Yeah, we should say this isn't... You know, you don't stick your phone in the front.
You don't stick your phone to it. You don't stick your phone in your pocket and connect the cables to it. It has nothing to do with mobile. HTC just helped them design the visor. I got the sense that they're also doing some software-ish stuff, but they didn't say, and I haven't seen, so I really can't say anything more than that. I mean, I don't know virtual reality all that well. We've got some people in the company who are way into Oculus, which is still a dev platform more than anything. I know.
Yeah, there's no consumer hardware.
He's pointed out a really kind of accelerated, quite aggressive path for this. They're doing developer units the next, the spring.
Yep.
They want a consumer release by the end of the year.
No, they don't want it. They were dead set on having this in consumers' hands. It sounded like by the holidays.
On consumers' faces.
What is this called?
The HTC Vive.
Well,
but... you will see at least right now, is it? Did they show it?
They did, yeah. Okay. It was in the presentation.
Sorry, I have to...
what, it's going to look like a Revive? Long.
No, it's not the Revive.
But clear.
You don't say Re, but it's part of the Re.
Re is like the little brand, and it's lowercase. It's like more of a logo.
Right. And then my next question was, well, so do we start referring to the Re camera as just as the HTC camera? No.
No, that's, it's just the Re camera.
So it's... Surely. It's a mess. It's another one of those instances where HTC does something actually fairly well. And then somebody has another idea. Same thing with Zoe's. Zoe's morphed so much.
Are the names that they don't shelve. I'm interested to see.
I'll tell you later.
We see every company do that.
You might be able to guess it. If you guess it by the end of the podcast, I'll nod my head and let you know. You just shout out random names from here on out.
So, the partnership with Valve was a big deal. If you look at a company like Valve, you have a huge, huge, huge engagement with digital distribution.
When you hear Valve, you hear Steam. In fact, I saw some headlines saying...
Dota, all this other stuff.
Yeah, I heard, people saying, it's going to be HTC and Steam announced something. No, it's HTC and Valve.
Yeah.
The other thing...
Unless I make no mistake as to who the junior partner in that relationship is. It's HTC.
It is Valve HTC.
And that, it's...
They also said, look, don't expect to be playing Dota 3 in this virtual reality helmet. And their big thing about this was, and they were very excited about it, as VR people tend to get. But I'm having a hard time digesting that, having not seen this or experienced a whole lot of VR to begin with. But their thing is, they're like, look, it's a full room experience. And Jeff Gaddis from HTC, I thought, tried to explain this fairly well during the presentation today, but it's, they say walk around the room, and you walk around the room. Now, something that was in the press release today that I hadn't even heard off the record yet was about the controllers. HTC is making some sort of controller for this that I guess you're holding in your hand, and I bet that's how you virtually walk through landscapes.
Otherwise,
and stuff.
You just bump into them.
Right. So it's it, but they are very much saying it is this full room experience. You don't feel like you're wearing that you're watching things in a visor right in front of you, and that's kind of how I felt with Gear VR and the little
right. Bit that's the same aim.
Yeah.
The screen is just in front of you, and like peripheral vision just doesn't really enter
it's
into
a
it.
Really interesting time for HTC, and you know, this goes back to last fall when the Recamera came out. They said we're going to do some weird stuff. We're going to do stuff in the home. We're going to do stuff in, I just totally forgot
wearables.
All the categories. Wearables.
Entertainment.
Home entertainment is the category we have not seen yet.
I mean, arguably the VR stuff is home entertainment, right?
That was part of it, yeah. But
I mean,
there's still this home category that you know, there are four boxes and we've seen three of them now, and they're not tipping their hat to that.
I was saying
so.
The other day, HTC knows, you know,
tipping their hat.
Prosper.
You don't tip a hat. Yeah. I mean, you do tip
a hat.
Well,
you do, but different situation.
I'm going to go tip a beer. I will. By the time I return,
well.
I want to Andrew to be talking about Galaxy S6.
I mean, HTC knows to prosper that they need to move beyond smartphones.
Hang on. This is important. Does anybody else need a drink while I'm up?
I'm good, Phil. We're in Estrella Town up here, so we're
let's get further into that. So HTC knows that to prosper they need to do more than smartphones. We've been doing that for a while, and you know, we all know the financial situation they're in currently. And it's almost like they've got a bunch of ideas that they're gonna throw some money out, they're gonna see what works and what doesn't. You know, you've got cameras, you've got VR, you've got wearables.
And HTC knows how to design cool things, not just cool phones.
Yeah, and they've just they've designed a relatively cool looking VR headset, the Recamera, whatever you think of the image quality. Is a intriguing looking camera. The wearable. So what you like about it is an interesting looking device. A lot of primary colors. Decent look to it.
Absolutely, and I just think they understand that maybe they're okay, Phil.
He's giving you time to get to the S6.
I mean,
we're gonna get to the S6.
Oh, that's right. Anyways, let me close my statement. HTC doesn't think that every one of these non-phone tablet products is going to be a hit, seller.
It's part of the bigger puzzle
for them. It's part of them branching out a little bit, and I think it's a fantastic idea.
Speaking of fantastic ideas,
toss it to Andrew to say some fantastic things, right?
About the Galaxy S6.
And S6 Edge.
Lowercase Edge.
And
S Space 6.
And Samsung Gear VR
Innovator
Edition for Samsung Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge.
So, anyway, we've got Galaxy S stuff.
Yeah.
Samsung dropped the bomb that
Wait. Okay.
This podcast brought to you in part by Heineken.
No, very much to you by Heineken.
So, they dropped the bomb that everybody kind of expected them to. Galaxy S6 and the Galaxy S6 Edge. Basically, you think about these as one device in two SKUs, pretty much. They're
SKU.
Units. 95%+ the same. They went with a new design, metal glass on both sides. Whatever you happen to think about glass on both sides, and they went all in-house with Samsung processors. They brought the Note 4's camera over, and then they made this weird Edge version. That has the screen curves over both of the sides.
This phone has two edges?
Where you normally would hold the phone, there is now screen.
Well, and it gets worse. Where it finally meets down on the edge there.
There's now glass on the other side.
But it's super thin on the edges. I hated it.
So the edges on the edge are really thin at the edge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you almost say that is a bit of a slippery fish, Phil?
I would say it's a slippery fish.
We've used most people have felt or had for a long time a phone with glass on the back, and whether it's an iPhone or a Nexus 4 or an Xperia phone or whatever, it's kind of a mixed bag. It does get scratched up over time. I don't care if it's Gorilla Glass 73 or whatever, it's actually Gorilla Glass 4. It's going to get scratched, and it also kind of just floats on tables like a air hockey table. So that's kind of weird and also makes the phone slippery. But aside from that, the phone looks really cool. It feels way better than the S5. And they upgraded...
The Edge does?
Both of them. I'm talking together. They look and feel better than the S5.
I don't know that the Edge
That's not
feels
hard
better.
To do.
Well, the Edge feels like it's actually... I think from any modern phone, including the S6, the S6 Edge, and even the Note, compare the S5 to that. It's almost like picking up a toy by comparison.
Right.
It,
so is the Edge glass on the back as well?
Yeah, it's glass on the back.
So it's effectively a phone that's almost entirely glass at this point then.
So I still get the feeling that they're just trying things with the S6 Edge. They're not expecting to sell a ton of them. The S6, the regular one, is going to be 95% of the sales.
It felt really good.
Yes, so the S6 feels really good. It feels like a normal phone that just happens to have glass on both sides. Other phones have glass on both sides.
Hey, you know what the bottom looks like?
Does it look like an iPhone 6?
I was going to say yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, look, here's my thing about that. It looks like an iPhone 6 in the same way that the Alpha looks like an iPhone 5. You know,
we're going to run out of designs at some point.
Well, exactly. If you're doing a metal frame, you've got to have these things.
Little things, like the speaker holes down
there.
A drilled speaker hole. I mean,
what are you going to do? I mean, here's the thing.
Triangular holes.
Right.
If you want something like that, maybe.
If you're very selective about the angles that you show, then yeah, you can make it look like an iPhone 6. And Samsung didn't do themselves any favors with the Alpha, with the angles that they showed.
Andrew didn't do them any favors either.
Well, yeah.
But the nice guy is side by side with the iPhone, so I mean, you know.
There's a difference between, you know, seeing this in a picture and saying it looks like an iPhone 6 and actually picking it up and
seeing
it.
You're going to see what you want to see, but you can't make a full metal phone and not have lines for the antennas. We've seen it on.
And if you only see it from the bottom, you're going to see it looking like an iPhone 6.
You can't have a drilled speaker grill that doesn't look like a drilled speaker grill unless, you know, they put punch triangular holes or something. The big thing is, you pick it up, it feels good as a smartphone. Who cares what it, you know, looks like compared to other smartphones? It, as one device, not sitting a side-by-side. You know, you don't use two phones, well, normal people, don't use two phones at the same time in two hands and compare the two. They pick up one phone, they decide holistically if they like that phone or not. And I think a lot of people are going to pick up the S6 and feel good about, you know, how it looks and feels as a phone that you're going to spend $600 or $700 or $800 on.
I like the rounded edges. I wasn't sold on the glass back. Trade show wonk, long term, who knows.
You know, fingerprints on the backs of these things from about 50 people.
I'll definitely give it a second chance, but my initial reaction was it felt like plastic back there. It felt like really thin.
Yeah, it's really thin glass.
Oh, yeah, you know, I had the Blue Vivo Air, and it's the same way. It is Gorilla Glass 3 on the back, but it's so very thin.
So the phone is 6.8 millimeters thick. I mean, there's a lot of componentry in there, so when you start talking about
componentry.
Right,
that's
so
a word.
When you have glass on both sides, it's like you can't just have really thick glass on both sides. It's not going to shatter or anything weird like that, but it will get scratched up because it's glass.
I wanted a slightly thicker Galaxy S6. It felt a little too thin.
And here's the other...
It's lighter than the S5, even with the metal and the glass.
Yeah, the other compromise is that because it is so thin, you're dealing with a 25-50 milliamp hour battery.
Which is sealed in.
So it's sealed in there because of the glass. You're not going to have a glass removable panel. 2550 milliamp hour down from 2800. But all they told you is it's really easy to charge the phone. And that doesn't make you feel good about whether or not the battery is going to last a long time.
Yeah.
It has Qi and PowerMat charging, which is great. I wish,
They actually said it's easy to charge the phone? I mean,
yes, that's...
Has it ever been difficult to charge?
Well, it charges very, very quickly. So they have their fast charging... And because it's a smaller battery, it charges by percentage really quickly.
I can drink this.
It's a metric film.
European measurement beer.
Yeah. Oh, 33D. What is a D?
Is that a 33 deciliter?
That's not the size.
It's a small kind of beer.
33 centiliters.
This is normally a 12-ounce beer.
I can drink this smaller beer quicker than I can drink another beer.
A large Estrella.
Because it's smaller.
That's a hell of a metaphor.
Anyways, so they're doing their own Exynos processor, which is a 14-nanometer processor, which means it's really, really small. And the smaller the connections in the processor are, the less energy it takes to move around. So they're saying the processor is 35% more efficient. As Alex pointed out, like 20 seconds later, and everybody else thinks, the screen is the biggest draw, and they bumped up the screen to Quad HD, and it's the super crazy bright and colorful one that's in the Note 4.
So they took battery life away. Sorry, they took battery capacity away and increase the screen resolution quite
right, also, dramatically. They also have the more efficient chip.
They also have a more efficient chip, and, you know, it's true in my daily life that if you have a phone with Qi charging, you top it up more often because it just happens to... You have chargers around. Not everybody has chargers around. We know that.
But I think, at the same time, the very best you would hope for, maybe, is that this would match the S5 in terms of battery life.
Which is just
You're
okay.
not going to be looking at, you know, Note 4 level battery life.
Right.
Most likely.
And I think that... I mean, we're going to have to see. They obviously thought that it was within the parameters of acceptable for battery life. You know, obviously, they could have made it a bit thicker. Who knows how that would have changed things.
It would have made it thicker.
I wish that they would have just stuck with the same 8.1 millimeter that they had. Phil's now on the Heineken Wikipedia page.
I'm going to say zero.
I'm sure it says somewhere on the can.
It says 33. Is it deciliter? Or
it's CL. Deciliter. It's
centiliter.
It's a CL. It's,
if you imagine it's a Coke can size.
Oh, that's a CL.
Beer.
It looks like
it's
a
CL.
Doesn't it look like a D?
I wanted
to see that. Beer Central podcast brought to you by Heineken.
BeerCentral.com.
Brought to you by Heineken
okay.
and the metric
so
system.
We all want more battery life. Yeah, I mean, that's something that we... You know, some manufacturers will just shoehorn a giant battery in the back of their phone. Some will let you swap it out and say that that's the... That's the compromise. So, did Samsung say anything about just how much more efficient this chip is going to be with
the processor,
smaller battery and bigger screen?
The processor itself is, cold hard fact, 35% more efficient than the Snapdragon 801 that was in the S5. That's a considerable amount. But it's all about how the processor handles it. It's their octa-core big-little system where it's four big cores at a higher clock speed, four small cores at a lower clock speed. They hand things off between the two. How that's all happening and how it's handing things, you know, between the different parts of the phone, that's all a big way of me saying the componentry is there, to use a fancy word again.
You love that word.
The parts are all there that they could be confident that this has decent battery life. We don't know.
But we'll find out.
But they decided to go with it, and that's that. That's how the phone.
They went in the direction of having a really thin phone with maybe an adequate battery versus a normal sized phone with perhaps, you know, a large style battery.
And so one thing to remember here is that you can't conflate the fact that the battery is small with the battery being sealed inside. I mean, the fact that it's sealed inside means that it's probably larger than it would have been if it was removable too. So, you know, by sealing it in, then they also help themselves out a little bit. Obviously, it's still smaller than the S5, but...
I have some late-breaking news.
What's that?
33 centiliters is 11.15 U.S. fluid ounces.
See, I said it was a 12-ounce can.
Wow. So it's really not that much smaller a beer.
Huh.
Which is important to some conversations.
It's much smaller than this Estrella.
Just not the one that Andrew is having right now about the Galaxy S6.
So, let's not... Who cares about the battery until we've used it for a long time? Which we haven't, so we won't care anymore.
That is andrew.martinick at androidcentral.com for those of you already emailing.
Correct.
Him, tell him that
and
you care about
Andrew, who has, like, Qi chargers all over his home.
So actually, yeah, no SD card, no removable
battery. Samsung said they have cold, hard evidence, whatever you want to call it, that people do not use SD cards in the numbers that you may think that they use SD cards. And they
do people use batteries in the numbers?
They use battery. They use
batteries.
So, right. That, and Alex made the point. They know how many people have bought the first party Samsung replacement batteries. Mm-hmm. They probably have a decent idea of how many third party batteries are also sold.
Just track the number of house flies.
Right.
Yep.
So,
that would be Alex.
So Samsung said they didn't put the SD card in there, and they chose to go with 32, 64, 128 gigs of storage instead, because they know, you know, they would be making this phone take an SD card, even though it takes up a very small amount of room. You know, there's always the trade-off inside the phone, especially when you made it thinner to... you know,
I mean, 128 gigabytes is, I mean, let's not, you know, sell it short. It's
a lot
of storage for a phone. Yeah. I mean, How many other phones are offering a 128 gigabytes?
Besides the iPhone,
I can only think of the iPhone.
The problem is, though, I mean, in Europe, you know, Richard. In Europe, you're lucky to get the base model in terms of storage. Samsung,
and that's the other.
Because the monopoly that exists with Carphone Warehouse and the carriers right now, no one sells the.
Now we're talking about a SKU issue in that we have the S6 and the S6 Edge. They come in three colors, but they each have an exclusive color, and then you have three different sizes as well. What carriers and retailers are going to carry, you know, oh, I want the gold 128 gig Edge. You know, that phone, they're going to make like three of those. You don't order direct from Samsung in the way that some people can from Apple SKU.
I was talking about Europe before. Europe, you know, you can order from Samsung if you want, so maybe there is the potential there. And you never know, maybe Samsung will... choose to sell direct. They've done that with Verizon Developer Editions in the past. Maybe there is the path there for them to do that.
A base model of 32 is not a bad level of storage to go at. I mean,
Which, by the way, and I meant to mention, is the only SKU we currently know of for the M9 at this point.
Sure.
So maybe the same sort of thing. I thought the green GS6 looked beautiful.
We should say that the M9 does have external storage.
It does.
So, yes, the colors are really interesting. There's your standard white, black, and a very light gold. It kind of looks silvery depending on the angle. And that's all the colors. They look different depending on the angle you hold them. But the Edge comes in a forest green color.
Beautiful.
On the front and back.
Loved it.
That's just a really awesome color. And the exclusive, whatever you want to call it, color for the regular S6.
We'll never get it in the US.
It's a bright blue, which is also very interesting. So, yeah. Story is... Oh my gosh, it's not completely different from the S5, just like normal, rational people expected.
It looks nice. Hey, by the way, did Samsung totally take credit for material design today?
I think
a little
they did.
Bit, yeah. There was a lot of material design going into what they were talking about with, you know, the colors that they were showing, and even some of the colors of the slides were very
material. And I'm not saying, like, J.K. Shin needs to get down and pray to Matthias Duarte on these things.
But a lot of the things they showed, like, we use primary colors, and things are flatter and easier to understand. And it's that's material design.
Material whiz.
Yeah. You had elements of that, but then you also have something just doing stuff that is just... like, universally bad from a UI perspective, like replacing icons which are immediately recognizable because they're pictures and humans recognize that in everything.
With words.
That's why we use icons. And replacing with words, and that's insane.
Does no one at Samsung
know how people perceive images?
Yeah, so on the software, it's very similar to the Lollipop updates on the GS5 and Note 4, but they've incorporated a little more of this flat, primary color kind of design. But at the same time, it's still... bright blues, bright yellows, and teals, and
so
different colors.
Burn your eyes off if you turn it on in the middle of the night and it's full bright.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, look, with AMOLED, they can turn the brightness down really, really low. They've got that down, whereas a little bit. There's bright and there's garish. I think there's maybe been a step away from the garish side with what they're doing now. It's bright and blue. There's a difference between being, you know, bright and just being kind of obnoxious with the way you use colors.
The big thing is, the first time you turn on the phone, it's going to look like the setup assistant in the home screen of your current Samsung phone, if you have one. The app drawer, I have to say, is not like 5 pages long with all the stuff. There's just a few Galaxy S on first boot, 2 full pages of apps, and there's a lot going on there, on top of course, the 15 Google apps and all that stuff. They've scaled it back a little bit, but this is a slow process. You know, all these rumors about it being dramatically scaled back and different and all this is...
I don't think it's dramatically anything, really, is it?
Right.
It's an evolution of...
Dramatically predictable.
That's the internet.
Yeah, I mean, it's an evolution of what you see in...
And that's not to say it's bad, just because it's predictable.
But
I think it's the right direction.
If you think about the average... Because, you know, let's face it, the Galaxy S is the biggest mainstream Android phone there is. And if you think about the upgrade cycle, we're now on the people who had a 4 who are now going to be upgrading potentially to the 6. So for those people,
they never got Lollipop.
It's a big change. You know, they haven't had Lollipop. The old
S4. Oh,
so S4. So for those people in the 2-year upgrade cycle, this is going to be a
every year. Right. I've already had people on Facebook when I shared this say, I have a Galaxy S3. I'm ready to
hell of an upgrade.
Yeah, Alcatel is making looks interesting.
Right. Yeah. We talk about it being dramatically millions of people.
And those are the people that are going to be looking at this phone the most. Yeah. What's the big reason to upgrade besides having the latest and greatest?
So the last big things that Samsung's talking about is our camera, and they really went into more Knox enterprise security stuff. So if that's your thing, that's your thing. I'll talk about the camera instead. It's always in standby, like kind of. They didn't explain, obviously, the exact way they're doing it. They're carving out some portion of the RAM to just hold onto the camera. All it opens the camera in 0.7 seconds, except for when it doesn't.
Press event tonight.
I mean, the camera is always running.
It opened in
1.5 seconds.
No, it opened in like 4 seconds.
Well, it's
horror stories coming out of this thing. Yeah. Because it's trade show wonk. They even say
about 1 second. Which is still fast. You should doing side by sides with the S6 and the Note 4 opening. It was much, much faster, but you know what happens when your phone's been on for 3 weeks and you uninstalled and installed a bunch of
apps? Have stats on this stuff. They must know that no one uses S Voice.
They must know that people turned off S Voice just press from the screen.
Because the best camera you have is the camera you have in your pocket. And now obviously I've got a kid. That's what I take most pictures of these days.
These manufacturers are always throwing shade when it comes to stuff like that. But what they showed tonight in the demos, and I take demo pictures like that with a huge grain of salt.
Right. So they're basically telling the same story as they did with the Note 4 camera, except for you have this thing where the camera always launches quicker, and they talked it up a little bit, but not hugely. So they made the software a little nicer, have this quick launch gesture. And it's in a smaller phone. You don't need the big phone to get it. Which is important for getting more light on a camera that doesn't have a flash. And
you don't want a front-facing flash anyway.
No.
A flash 3 feet from your face.
Right.
The overall package looks really good. The thing that I worry that they've done that here, I hope they haven't.
It's easy to charge. What are you worried about?
I have so many troubles plugging.
You did it on the Alpha, and you were saying, okay, that's a smaller market device. All right, to do that on the S6, I really hope that they would be more confident in their
more disappointed by the non-removable battery and the.
I've always thought that's such a
Andrew Martinick. AndroidCentral.com.
Send him pictures of your SD cards.
They removed
the phone, and I don't find a major flaw in the way that it looks, feels, or acts in the time that I've spent with it. Have not got that. I don't see it on the face of it. Don't see a fatal flaw with the S6, and that's kind of my takeaway.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird position. I've had the HTC M7 and the M8, and I really
they're changing less than they've ever changed from one flagship to another. That Samsung is changing more than it's ever changed from one flagship to another.
Well, in listening, they're saying, you know, we learned from our mistakes.
We learned from our successes and our missteps. And when a Samsung CEO says that in a press release and stuff,
it wasn't that good, and now it looks like this, and it's really great.
And I think we're seeing just a difference in the way Samsung presents itself in general, just in terms of the presentation, corridors and stuff.
By the way, it needs to be said, and we need to wrap up here soon, but it needs to be said that two of the first three people on stage today
were engineers and Samsung executives.
That was very cool to see, and you really don't see.
Yeah, it's like Samsung's taken all of the criticism of their software, their hardware, and their presentation.
8 hours and actually do our jobs once we're there is an important thing for us.
So I don't think I'm on the S6, S6 Edge.
That's new Gear VR. I mean, it's a new Gear VR.
Gear VR Innovator Edition for Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge.
It has cool cooling or something.
It's an S6 for your face.
It's a Gear VR that's 15 wrapped to your face.
What else do we have coming up this week?
So we got new stuff from Sony tomorrow morning, we believe. Nothing's been officially announced just yet, but the leaks are even thin and probably waterproof.
I get to spend the day with Microsoft tomorrow for anybody who's interested in any of that stuff.
Yeah.
More Windows 10, probably most likely phones, it looks like.
And we've got an online press conference.
The other side of Huawei
Tuesday. Yeah.
And of course we had the little SanDisk. World's largest, which
200 gigabytes.
I'm just looking at that on Facebook.
$400 US. Yeah, so what 200 is, gigabytes on a micro SD card?
What does that increase that 3 SD card phone to? So like,
oh, the Sega.
Oh, the Sega.
Yeah, it's got 2 SD cards.
That increases it to 1200.
Wow.
When you think about when you think about what it is, I mean, it's something we've just seen this evening, and I mean, it's I have a 256 SSD in my laptop. And this thing is a micro SD card that will hold almost the same.
At CES, Samsung was showing us 2 terabytes. So, not that crazy to think that you could put 200 gigs on a SD card.
But when you see some 100 gigabytes on this thing...
They're not holding it on their hand. They're holding it on their finger.
It's...
Right.
My hard drive is either 2 gigabytes or like 6 gigabytes at the most.
Mm-hmm. I remember buying like a book of...
A spinning hard drive.
And iPod is the thing that...
micro SD card for $400. I don't think any of us are going to buy
one. It's crazy expensive now, but it shows...
But in 2 years, it's going to be, $150. And go, hey...
And because it's the SDXC, standard, it should work in phones that support that today. So, the spec sheets will always say micro SD up to 128 gigabytes today because that's what you can buy. Now you can buy 200, or you will be able to buy 200, so... Yeah.
Technically, the SDXC standard supports up to 2 terabytes, so we're going to be with XC for a while.
We've got a way to go.
Yeah.
All right, I think I want to wrap it up.
It's a long waveform.
It's a very long waveform. So we will be here for a few more days covering some more stuff. I've got some more M9 stuff to work on. A whole bunch of pretty cool features to show off on that.
Actually getting to go to the show floor tomorrow.
Yeah,
opens tomorrow.
Wait, has it started yet?
Right, we can go see the cool, go by the booths and see how everybody's displaying everything.
So stay tuned. We got a lot more coming up. And then I think on Friday after I return home, I'll do a podcast with Jerry and Russell. Maybe we'll find another person or two to come on and discuss what they've seen here from sort of that outsider's perspective, and they haven't been buried in it and not just totally exhausted by it.
Tell us how much these things suck that we say are great.
So if you've actually sat through this entire podcast, thank you.
We'll edit all that out, right? We'll just chop it up.
Absolutely not.
Cut an hour out.
It's just going to be basically the beer.
We'll just leave the beer in. We'll cut the phones out. Just leave the beer in.
Yeah. Beer cast. So thank you guys. Thank you for listening and all the reading and clicking and sharing and all that good stuff you do. Derek, where can we find you on a daily basis at Mobile Nations?
You can find me crying underneath my desk.
I was going to say in the corner, but that's good too.
You can also find me all over Mobile Nations. I write for news on all sites and occasionally some editorial stuff when I can find my time to crawl out from underneath my desk. Richard. You can also find me on Twitter.
Yes.
I am on DKDSGN, and I'm on Google+, but you probably shouldn't bother because I don't really use it.
Richard, you are mostly at Windows Central.
Yes, I have moved to Windows Central, but I keep popping up on AC maybe from time to time, especially this week. So
maybe
it depends if Phil lets me back in, and every once in a while. So
yeah, fair enough.
Got some hard feelings.
This was only. Oh, did we talk about Acer at all? We didn't. You have 30 seconds to talk about Acer and the Windows connection.
AndroidCentral.com/Acer.
They have a fitness band that works with Android, Windows Phone, and iPhone. They have a new Windows Phone.
All right, that's great. Brilliant. Alex, where can we find you?
You can find me on AndroidCentral.com. Find me at Alex Dobey on the Twitters.
Behind an Estrella can.
And Google+, Alex Dobey, and all the other things and stuff.
And you all know Andrew.
Yep. Andrew.Marnik@AndroidCentral.com. Send me your complaints about the Galaxy S6.
I will. Thank you.
I'm personally responsible.
All right, that's it. So
there was a version with an SD card removal battery. It was like, no, this isn't happening.
I said, this is not going on.
We don't want 200 gig SD cards.
Direct red phone line to Korea.
That's it from Barcelona. We'll be here all week, but you probably won't hear from us again in this forum, and that's probably not a bad thing because we're pretty loopy already. But thank you again, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Derek's like, what just happened there? Why did all these people say bye at the same time?
Oops.